Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Wow. Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming back to Rated G Radio tonight. We have our very special guest co-host, Kurgan Edwards Stout. He has been on the show many times before. Last month, he came on, and we just decided we're going to do, like, gay news, and we had so much fun over it. I get so excited afterwards. I'm calling it Super Gay Radio when Kurgan comes on, because we're just going to talk about LGBT issues and things that are going on around the world in the LGBT community. And so, Kurgan, welcome back.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Holy cow. Did we have a good time last month?
It was terrific.
It was so much fun. Oh, my gosh. So, anyway, we've got a bunch of topics coming up tonight to talk about. But before we get to that, what's been going on in your world the last month?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you. You know, as you know and some of your listeners know, I've got kids and you know, life is never dull. We've been dealing with our oldest one is in high school and has a cell phone, and so, you know, we're doing periodic cell phone checks, and that leads to a whole, you know, array of interesting topics and, you know, things we've got to deal with, and I didn't realize, you know, parenting in this day and age was going to be quite so tough, but definitely some challenges, but other than that, it's been a great month. I had a new blog post at Huffington Post and LGBTQ Nation that got quite a bit of attention, and it was kind of in tribute to this partner, Shane of mine, who died 20 years ago. So that, you know, was an emotional thing for me, as well as it was great to see it get some traction and people paying attention to it and kind of honoring him. So it's been a great month.
I love hearing that. So if people would still like to read the article, is it still up on Huffington Post, or is it on your Facebook fan page, or what's a good avenue for people to find that?
You know, probably the easiest thing, it's on my website, which is Kurgan, K-E-R-G-A-N, Edwards-Stout at .com, and it's there. It's also on Huffington Post, and it's on LGBTQ Nation. A little harder to find, though, but it's right on the homepage of my website. And, you know, it sounds like you've had a very busy month, too, by the way.
Holy cow.
Preparations.
It's been a crazy month, crazy year, and it's all coming, a lot of it's coming to a head on Monday, so I'm really grateful for everything that's happening right now.
Well, tell people about your video shoot.
Well, okay, so here's the deal, folks. In the process of doing this new album, I found that I ended up, and I'm, honestly, I'm not that, I'm more active-ish. I'm aware of issues and things like that, but you're usually not going to find me out in, you know, in front of a building or a business or any place like that with a big sign and, you know, with a blowhorn and doing anything like this. But I found in the process of writing my album that I started to incorporate a lot of LGBT issues into many of the songs and or just themes or flavors of it, because I thought, you know, who else is singing about these songs in a pop culture way except for, you know, things that you might see on logo that might be more of a satirical nature. Nothing wrong with it. I think it's all great, fantastic. As long as people are out there and enjoying it, that's wonderful. But I was finishing up the album, Kurgan. I originally was going to do 10 songs. It's now 11. But I was on song number 9, finishing song number 9. I'm sitting at the computer after the show one night working on lyrics, and I've got SiriusXM playing. And on my 80s on 8, which is always the station I listen to if I'm not listening to SiriusXM OutQ 106, on comes Billy Idol's White Wedding. And I'm sitting here coming up, you know, thinking of ideas that I could work on for that last song. And I said, you know, it's a nice day for a gay wedding. Wouldn't that be cute? Ha, 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 I said to myself. And then I started, you know, about 30 seconds later, I said, that's the song. And so long story short, I went to my producer and I will call him my business manager, and I said, you know, guys, what do you think about doing a song called Gay Wedding? And they said, well, it'd be totally fun to do, but do you, you know, what? We probably need to get some approvals. We need to get, you know, Billy Idol's team on board, make sure that we don't have any issues from a copyright infringement publishing standpoint. And I said, I feel so strongly about this that it has to happen. And they kind of coached me, and they said, you know, you better make sure your T's are crossed and I's are dotted. I said, it will happen. I just have it in every fiber of my being that it's going to be taking place. So we did the song Gay Wedding, and it's basically, I call it the adaptation of White Wedding, but my producer, Brian Pothier, brilliant musician, fantastic producer, recreated all of the music. I call it an updated version of that classic song from 1982, and we just created a fantastic song. I wrote it for the LGBT community. I wrote it with a verse for gay men. I wrote it for a verse for lesbians. And hopefully there's something in there for everybody, but we go throughout the entire song talking about the fact that we can now get legally married in so many states, and hopefully by the time this is released in May, as we get closer to June's Supreme Court ruling on LGBT marriage equality in the nation, we'll be able to have one of the signature lines in the song is, no matter the state that you're from. So I would hope that this will be able to be played at prides, gay weddings, on top 40 radio around the country, just as you would any other song. But it really has a nice message about the fact that for a lot of people who've been in LGBT relationships over the years, you've been discriminated against, persecuted, you've been denied rights and all of this, and now with marriage being one of the major issues in our community today, that it's the ability to go out and celebrate the fact that you can get gay married. And it's silly to call it gay married, but that's how the song came about. So in the last couple of months, I've hired an entertainment lawyer, and I said, I want to make sure all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted. So they've reached out to Billy Idol's people, and literally in record time, Kurgan, I sent the information over from, like my bio, the sample, or, the mix of the song that we have, my lyrics, their lyrics, all of this. And in under 3 hours, the publishing company for Billy Idol come back and said, yeah, we're on board. We're totally for this. This is great. So they approved my adaptation of this. We've worked through the other details this week. And so this coming Monday, I had a cup of green tea right before the show. I probably shouldn't have done that, Kurgan, so I need to apologize. So I'll be a little chatty. But right before the show tonight, we got the other things worked out to do the music video on Monday, and we're actually going to be filming at your church, Church of the Foothills. Pastor Mike there has been just so gracious and wonderful in offering the fantastic sanctuary for filming, not only for that, but the title track of the song, which is called Blonde Jesus. So we've got two videos, which is unheard of to ever do in a single day, and we're going to do two music videos in one day this coming Monday, March 30th. At Church of the Foothills in Santa Ana. If folks would like to be an extra, I'm looking for extras in the afternoon filming, because that's when we're going to be doing Gay Wedding. And the filming is tentatively scheduled to shoot from 2:30 to 5:30, and we're going to have a great time. So if you're not working on Monday in the afternoon and you're in Southern California, I'm going to strongly encourage all of you to come down. We're going to have desserts provided by Downey's Desserts. Ken and Angela Downey are brilliant bakers, and they're going to have pride-themed desserts, including a pride rainbow cake topper that we're going to try to figure out how to use in the shoot in some capacity, and we're going to have fun. So how is that for a short answer to an even shorter question?
Well, I think that's great, and first of all, for anyone who's not familiar, check out Garrett's Facebook page. There is an event link there, and you can find out all the information about the video shoot. But I think the bigger question, which is probably on everyone's mind, is you're doing this shoot for Blonde Jesus in the morning. You're doing mm-hmm. Gay Wedding in the afternoon. And we mm-hmm. all know that you have these luxurious blonde locks. So I'm wondering, are you going to be doing any kind of Billy Idol hair chop-off in between the two
okay.
videos?
So here's the deal. Okay, now you're getting an exclusive here, Kurgan, because really nobody knows this. I've been growing, well, the people, if you're friends with me on Facebook, you'll know this. I've been growing my hair out for the last year knowing that I'm going to do something that's like rock and roll, and I wanted to, go and get all sweaty and have my head shake around on stage and do fun things like that and just look like a rock and roller. I figured, why not? I've also been growing out this fantastic beard over the last 3 or 4 months that's I could pass for Grizzly Adams. More people will say I look like Barry Gibb than Grizzly Adams, but you get the idea. It's big and scraggly and crazy. So when I get a hold of the person that's going to end up directing this, Ann Grasso, she said, your hair still isn't long enough. And I said, you've got to be kidding me. I've grown this out for like 6 months. I've been eating 14 pounds of gelatin in my coffee every morning to get my hair to grow faster. She goes, well, that's great, but your hair still isn't long enough. And I said, can't sexy blonde Jesus hair be a little bit shorter for today's times? No, you have to have like Jesus length hair. So I'm actually tomorrow after I get done with the show. I've got the Worry Dolls coming in to do the Friday Night Dance Party. We're doing it at noon tomorrow. We're doing a world premiere of their new album called The Ride. The second I'm done with that, I'm heading over to a place in Anaheim, and I'm going to have hair extensions put in so I can have the appropriate length hair for the Blonde Jesus video in the morning. Okay? Now, I had planned originally to do day one, Blonde Jesus, day two, gay wedding, so I could figure stuff out. But with the short turnaround time, that just simply is not possible. So I'm going to have this huge mane of hair that I've never had before that's probably going to freak me out in a big way tomorrow about 5 o'clock when he's done. But I would have had it taken out, except that when I found out how much it was going to cost to have put in, I said, oh, that could stay in for as long as it needs to stay in. I don't need to have that pulled out. So what's going to happen is, though, after we finish shooting Blonde Jesus in the morning, I'm going to go shave my beard off. I'm going to get clean shaven and then pull my hair back in a ponytail for the first part of Gay Wedding, and then we're going to see how it goes from there. But I would like to be a little bit more homage-y to Billy Idol, as I'm so grateful for the opportunity to record the song. However, the cost of having my hair done costs too much, and I'm not going to forsake that just to cut it all off. So there's your answer for that, Kurgan.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's all going to be fun, and you know, I've been going back and watching Billy Idol music videos all week, and you know, sometimes up till like 1 a.m. I'm sitting here watching just the things that he's done recently in the last year. And, you know, Billy traditionally wears, you know, black or black and red, something like this. And so I'm hoping, and, you know, he's alabaster white. So if he saw the sunshine, he'd probably melt. And I have a really, really dark, dark tan that just seems to get darker all the time. So I'm kind of like, you know, George Hamilton of the LGBT singing community. I'll say that. And so what I'm going to do is wear all white. I even went out and bought this week white, I couldn't find white combat boots, but I went and bought black retro combat boots at DSW. Thank you very much, DSW, for that. And I had to go to about 45 different stores to get the right combat boot because my director kept saying, nope, that's not going to work, that's not going to work, that's not going to work. Now, my comment to her was, nobody's going to be looking at the shoe. And she goes, don't be so sure. So I had a pair of nice combat boots that didn't cost $1 million, and I went to a shoe store and got leather paint. I painted them white, and then today I've spray painted them with just a very light brushing of satin white from, thank you, Rust-Oleum. So the shoes are now white, so I'm going to be white from head to toe, kind of the opposite of Billy Idol. So it's I think the comparisons will be kind of fun to draw on that. But yeah, so that's what we're doing.
Well, you know, as if tonight was not super gay enough, I think just the attention you put to your hair and shoe selection just shows how super gay you are. So, congratulations for that.
Well, thanks. I mean, this is going to be something that is historic in, I think, a lot of ways, and I don't want to just kind of say it the way it's going to sound, because it's going to sound the way it's going to sound. But I think once the song is, you know, we get the video done and we get it released and we can get it out to either Pride festivals, you know, the DJs around the country and let people hear this, I think it's really going to, at the core of people, resonate, because the song is so well produced and the music is just great, that people will want to hear this. And so I think this is going to be something that's going to be historic, you know, not only for me, but in a bigger scale for the LGBT community, to have a rallying song that they can, you know, get up and dance and fist pump to and pogo stick and all this other fun stuff for, you know, this year and many, many years to come. So I'm just grateful that it's all happening. And the whole thing, Kurgan, it just, everything fell into place, you know, and it's just like, oh, okay, this happened, and it happened easily. Well, let's go to the next step. Oh, that happened. That happened easily. So I'm just hopeful that trend will continue through Monday when we do the shoot. And we may end up having to do some other video shooting outside of the 3 hours that we've got blocked for this on Monday, but the majority of the time that we need will be, you know, expertly executed. So everybody's on point that we need to do it and be smart about the shots. We're not wasting time. It's, you know, time's money, bam, bam, bam. But, super gay hair and super gay shoes.
One of the things I love about you, though, is you know, you make it sound like, well, everything just fell into place. But I think one of the things you do probably better than most is you put it out there every day of what your goals are, what you want to accomplish, and you put steps into action to actually obtain your goals. So you know, things may have fallen into place, but it was with a lot of prompting on your, you know, behalf and with your drive and initiative. And I think that's something that a lot of us could really learn from, because so many of us talk about, oh, I wish things were this way, or I wish things were this way. And, you know, what are you putting out into the world each day, and what are the steps you are taking to make things happen? And you're just doing it all right. You're laying it out there for us, so we can all follow you by your example.
Well, you know, but here's the deal, Kurgan. Nobody's going to just roll out a red carpet for you unless you roll it out yourself. You know, they might help you a little bit along the way, but at the end of the day, if you want to make your miracles happen, you got to make them yourself. You can't rely upon somebody else and do the woe is me trail of tears. You know, somebody didn't come and give me $1 million today. What am I going to do? Go out and make that $1 million happen. You know, and so a lot of times when I put my believe and receive, attract and allow, I put my little affirmation out there. Honestly and selfishly, I'm doing it for myself because it keeps me accountable for my day. It's kind of like my daily to-do list that I'm going to be honest and true to myself about what I'm promising myself I'm going to do. And along the way, if other people, you know, get some benefit out of it, that's wonderful, but I don't really do it for them. I do it for me. But it's, you know, every day I look at what do I need to do today to make, you know, make this move forward and you know, happen, because, you know, nobody else is out there doing it for you. You might have help, but, you know, you're going to be your champion. You have to be it. Somebody won't do it for you unless you're paying them a lot of money, and then at that point you're probably paying them too much. But anyway, so with all of that being said, I would love it if everybody comes out Monday in the afternoon at Church of the Foothills in Santa Ana. If you want more information, go to my Facebook page. There is an event there. I do need to have kind of an RSVP from you. If you don't come, I get it, but I'm trying to make sure that we don't go and create like this mob scene and have thousands of people show up. I'd really like to get it to be about 100. That will be very manageable both for the parking lot situation, street parking, the church, and all of that. So if you can go, please come. I'll give you a hug. We can take a picture. Bring your phone. You can, you know, we can take selfies or whatever you want to do, and you'll get some great desserts. Also, the first 100 people that show up on Monday, I'm giving away the free, I'd say downloads, what do you call them now when you give away music for free? But I'm giving away Blonde Jesus and Gay Wedding a week before they are released to the general public. You'll get a free complimentary copy for showing up as well, because it's, you know, this is we call it an unpaid extra event. So it's really, you know, the kindness of your own heart and the ability to show up and be energized. That's what I'd love. So anyway, let's get to some gay news. There's so much to pick from today. Kurgan, what is there anything that I sent you a list, you know, this morning? Is there anything that I sent over that jumped off the page, or is there anything else that might be interesting for us to start out talking about?
I think you selected a lot of great topics. You know, one of the things that's interesting to me is one of yours was about the cancellation of HBO's show Looking.
Yeah.
And what was interesting about this to me is for many people who know, HBO for two seasons has been running the show Looking, which is gay-themed, takes place in San Francisco, and it's really a slice of life about these core group of characters and what they've been through. And it was recently, well, in the last day or two, announced that HBO was canceling the show, but they're going to be doing some kind of wrap-up movie that kind of explains what happened to many of the characters, because they left the season two on a kind of a cliffhanger. And I thought this was interesting because, first of all, I only watched the first episode of Looking, and I was so bored. And I watch everything gay, gay, gay. I mean, Russ, my partner, he's always complaining because our Netflix queue is, you know, several hundred deep, and most of it's indie, and they're usually like 2 stars or 3 stars. I mean, most of the things that are done that are LGBT are not great quality. And if anyone was going to love a gay series, it should be me on paper. I mean, the mm-hmm. guy who wrote and directed Looking also did a movie called Weekend, which was a great little independent movie. But what's been interesting to me about this is not just the cancellation, because, you know, the audience wasn't there for it. There were a lot of problems along the way. The first season was very uneven. It took them a while to find their groove. And from all reports, the second season hit its stride. But what's really interesting to me is how I've seen on social media, some of the gay viewers are so adamant that HBO is making a wrong move, and they feel like doing whatever it takes to get this show back on the air. And I'm kind of taken aback by it a little bit because, you know, what I saw was not good. And granted, I only watched the first episode of the first season, and my partner Russ watched more, and he got bored. And but what's interesting is there's a guy, his name is Peter Staley. He's one of the foremost HIV/AIDS activists, and he was fundamental in the early days of ACT UP New York in terms of getting drug approvals and things like that. He really was there with Larry Kramer and all the other folks who started it up, and he's featured in the movie How to Survive a Plague. And so he's, you know, his whole life is HIV and AIDS and activism. And the other day I saw in his Facebook post, he's like, okay, folks, who's with me? Let's rally. Let's get HBO to change their minds and bring back this show. And I'm thinking, you know, you've poured your life into activism for HIV and AIDS, and yet you're going to somehow now, you know, try to get some mediocre TV show back on the air, you know, that nobody was really watching to begin with in terms of sizable numbers. So it's just an interesting dichotomy to me, and it raises a question for me of, like, for an LGBT audience, I feel like we're so starved for storytelling that reflects our lives that even if something is awful or even, you know, mediocre, we embrace it just because it's a reflection of us and our stories. And so it doesn't have to be good. And that says more about us than it does the storytellers. But it's just kind of, you know, I feel like we're often groveling for crumbs. And that's when you were mentioning that, especially with your song, you know, you're looking for something that people can hang on to and adopt as their own. I think, you know, the LGBT audience is hungry for stories and hungry for songs and hungry for things that reflect our experience. But sometimes I question if the priorities are in the right place, when it seems like in this case, you know, I know there's a passionate core audience, but I kind of wonder if they're spinning their wheels on the appropriate.
Well, you know, Kurgan, in the article, it says the season finale, which is now the series finale, pulled in just under 300,000 people. I'm not sure for a network, you know, that might be great on a, you know, on maybe a fringe network, and I can't even think of one that I would care to name because I think they all really want to do fantastic things. But for a network like HBO to have under 300,000 people watching your season finale of a show, and, you know, let's face it, this has not been a big secret that Looking was on the cusp of being canceled for several weeks now. So it wasn't like after, you know, Monday morning came and now everybody has to get in a tizzy because they had no clue. It wasn't like, you know, Looking was the number one show on HBO and HBO finally just said, you know, after two seasons, we're just not going to do it. HBO is very pragmatic. They have, you know, tons of other shows that face the same type of, you know, fate. They have the Laura Dern vehicle called Enlightened, and that was, you know, cut after its second year. You know, same with another show called Getting On, and Hello Ladies also lasted one season before getting the you know, the movie version of the end of the series. You know, so it's like, because I did watch all of season one. I don't know how I made it through. I'd watch it before I go to bed, and honestly, I'd fall asleep sometimes before the show would be over, and I was watching it on like HBO Go or Netflix or something like that. And I was looking for a show that I could resonate with, and I think, you know, you just grasp onto it because, well, there's nothing else, quote unquote, representing the community, so I might as well watch this, even if it's, you know, even if it's not the best thing in the world. So let me, Kurgan, I want to ask you this. So did you watch the show Queer as Folk when that was on Showtime years ago?
I watch a great deal of it, a lot more than I watched of Looking, that's for sure.
Right.
You know,
so what do you think of that by comparison?
I think, you know, for me, that show, even though it's not my life, I understood the characters. It was much more club-centric than I am now at this point in my journey. But I understood the characters, and, you know, I thought, obviously, you've got some great eye candy and whatnot. And I think, you know, initially, at least Queer as Folk drew people in, and then it got a little cartoony and whatnot. I think the biggest thing, you know, the biggest sin you can do as a storyteller is to bore people. And I feel like that's what was happening with Looking. And, you know, as you were mentioning, in terms of a business decision, it's not like the gay community did not know that this show existed. If you were anywhere remotely near the Internet in the months leading up to this new season.
Right.
It was like plastered on Queerty and Toll Road and Advocate. There were constantly either stories about the debut, there were advertising. So they really went out of their way to promote this. And, you know, the fact that they have a paltry viewership, you know, just shows you that it wasn't working for whatever, no matter how well-meaning or well-intentioned, it just wasn't really resonating with viewers. And so I'm not surprised.
Right.
I mean, I am surprised that they're actually going to take the time to wrap up this story, which is really nice. But I will say this, you know, you had on the show one of my dear friends, Robert Michael Morris, who starred on the... he was on the Comeback, which HBO ran 10 years ago. It was a one-season show with Lisa Kudrow, and it didn't get great ratings, but it had an avid fan base. And after the show was over, it really grew in terms of all the, DVD sales and online streaming. It was really became a cult favorite. And then they brought it back for, I believe it was 6 or 8 episodes, you know, this past.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of surprising that they're doing this follow-up movie. But, you know, if there's an audience for this, and if it continues to grow, who knows, you know, maybe 5 years from now we'll be seeing another rendition of Looking in some fashion.
Well, I would hope so. You know, it's interesting. You know, we and the comparisons are probably going to be a little bit harder to make. But we look at, you know, Looking, which, you know, is now sunk after 2 seasons. And then we can take a look at a different show that it was on Fox this year, Empire. And Empire, of course, focused on an African community, African-American community, and, you know, the music scene. And, you know, it debuted strong, and in every single episode, the ratings increased week over week. And I don't know, you know, some people called it, you know, this generation's version of Dynasty, you know, with the soap opera antics and things like that. And, you know, so I think if you have well-written TV and it's compelling and, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter what demographic you fit in, you know, people will watch it. And it's so whether it's LGBT or, you know, the people that live in middle America that, you know, don't have any LGBT people that they know of, little do they know, they're all around. I think that it's really surprising that, you know, a show like Looking just didn't do better, or, you know, from a maybe a writing standpoint, and who am I to criticize? You know, they got it on TV, good for them. But, you know, why aren't you writing more compelling TV that makes people want to watch it versus, you know, the stories that, like you said, bore you to sleep?
Well, you made a great point. I mean, Russ has actually watched some of Empire, and he enjoyed it so much. He told me, he goes, you know what? He goes, it's got, you know, some musical numbers, so it kind of is reminiscent of Glee in a certain aspect.
Mm-hmm.
It's got, you know, the drama of a good soap opera. It's got great actors like Terrence Howard and Taraji Henson. And he goes, you know, our kids are African-American and we're white. And he goes, you know, I really want to sit down and watch this with the kids. So we've got it in our Netflix queue, and we're all going to sit down and pile in bed and, you know, watch the series together.
Cool.
And what a great, you know, the fact that we're motivated, because obviously if we start watching it, we hate it, we'll turn it off. But, you know, at least he was motivated enough to say, hey, this is so good, we need to all watch it together, as opposed to like, oh my gosh, that first episode bored me. You know, what's
right.
The impetus to watch again, other than, yes, the characters are gay? You know, there's other avenues out there, that other shows that have got gay characters on them. It's not like you have to have
right.
one show that's all gay. It's we're becoming more of the mainstream, for better or worse, and, you know, we're being represented in other places. And so, you know, you can turn to an Empire, or you can turn to How to Get Away with Murder or Scandal or something like that, and you see gay characters. So it's not like...
And they're brilliantly written.
Yeah, a lot more, you know, there's a lot more gravitas and a lot more interest from a viewer standpoint in terms of wanting to see what happens to these people. And I think that element was just not there with Looking.
It just and the thing is, at least for me, I wanted to like it. And even by the end of season one, I was like, oh, I'm really trying here. I'm really, really trying. And I saw the direction they're going. But anyhow, okay, next topic, because otherwise we'll just lament on this for the next, you know, for the rest of the program. And there's so many other things to talk about. How about, since we're talking about your kids here, skip to the article about an inclusive curriculum.
Ah, yes. The LGBT curriculum or inclusive curriculum.
I thought that was a really cool article. This is again off of Huffington Post. It says the necessity of LGBT inclusive curriculum. And honestly, I never once thought of this until I read the article, and now it makes so much sense. As a parent, do you know what your kids are learning in their schools about LGBT people?
You know, there has not been a lot. Obviously they're in the California school system. It really is not driven by sexual orientation. You know, they get the same, you know, things that we were taught in school of all the different movers and shakers, but they rarely go into anything about anyone's personal life. It's much more about
right. The
activities these people did that led them to become famous and you know, necessary to know in terms of history. But certainly no mentions thus far in terms of anything LGBT.
And honestly, before I read the article, I was like, well, how important really is this to be talking about? And then, you know, the questions posed in the article that, you know, the author writes, in my AP U.S. history class, we were discussing the multiple choice question, which civil rights group led the Stonewall riots? And out of a class of 20, he was the only person that knew the answer to that. And I went, oh, that would have been a good question to ask. And then it was like, well, you know, can you name anybody who's an LGBT, you know, leader? And so they came up with Michael Sam and Elton John. And, you know, I'd probably throw in an Ellen. So there you go. You got your three people right. But outside of that, you know, kids or even adults, you know, I don't think really are aware of who some of the most successful people are leading in a variety of different industries, from tech to entertainment to politics to you name it. There's a bunch of people out there, well, even historically speaking, you go back to Alexander the Great, and you realize that there, you know, if you're, you know, a struggling kid or you're questioning or you don't know, or maybe you're in an environment that might not necessarily be so fantastic, you know, you start learning about some of these other historical figures, past and present, and maybe that makes a little bit of a difference. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, I definitely agree with you, and I think one of the things one of the plays that was central to me growing up as a high school student and junior high, and I don't know if they did it at your high school, but it seems like almost every high school does a rendition of Our Town, which is they do it because it's cheap. It was written by a guy named Thornton Wilder, and it typically is done with like very little set pieces, just very bare bones, but it's really this slice of life look at Americana. And it's about these two families, and it's really about your place in the world and the impact you leave. And it's all about, you know, what does it mean to be an American and these people in this small town. And what's really interesting is that most people don't know that the guy who wrote Our Town, Thornton Wilder, reportedly was gay. And in later life, he had a relationship with a guy, and I'm blanking on his name. I want to say Phil Atlas, who was kind of, in that era, was kind of doing some more kind of fetishy photography and things like that. But mm-hmm. So here, this guy who wrote this, you know, quintessential American piece, potentially was a gay man, and so you just kind of have to wonder. He's looking at America through his lens, through his experience, and he writes something that resonates with people the whole world over. And, you know, how many people actually know that? Very few.
Well, and I don't want to give anything away about any of the guests that I've had on the show without their approval, but I've recently had a guest on the show that wrote this brilliant book that, quite frankly, I wasn't sure what the book was going to be, and I thought, oh, you know, I dove into the book and couldn't stop reading until the guest came on. And it was a fantastic interview. Everybody loved it. A ton of people said, I can't wait to go out and buy the book, which, of course, is what you want to have happen when, you know, you have a guest on. You want to move the merch. And we met for lunch here in Southern California about a week or two later. And, you know, he revealed to me that, you know, he was gay and, in fact, married to his partner for, you know, they'd been together, you know, 30-some-odd years. And I sat back and reflected. It's like, wow, you know, you write this hugely compelling book and you do all of the, you know, it's, I would call it a great American novel in my own, you know, from my own reading. loved everything about it, the word, the story, everything was just so well put together. And here was this part of his personality that, you know, just didn't, at least in book number one, doesn't come through from a writing standpoint, because it was just something he didn't want to reveal, it, you know, in character or in another character. And I thought that was really powerful because, you know, there are so many people out there that don't necessarily, you know, wear, you know, their heart on the sleeve, so to speak. And I'm call me one of them as well. But I just was really shocked to see that that would be something that I found so profoundly moving, and yet that was such a, you know, huge part of his life that wasn't in shared. Now, again, it wasn't an autobiography or anything like that, but there was no element of that thrown into the book, and I was kind of surprised.
Well, you know, this is all reminding me of something I wrote 3 years ago for Huffington Post, but it was called Imagine the World Without Us, and it's not necessarily about curriculum, but it's really about the knowledge base of the wider population and their lack of knowledge around LGBT people. And the article really focused on, you know, okay, you may not like gays, you may not think we deserve to be here on the planet, but if you follow this train of thought through all the way to the end, if we were not here, what would it look like? And it kind of went on to say, you know, imagine the Sistine Chapel, you know, without its beautiful ceiling, mm-hmm. you know, painted by a gay man. Or imagine, you know, Christmas without the songs of Johnny Mathis sung by a gay man. You know, and it goes through kind of, you know, a list by list of all these people who most people probably don't know are LGBT. And it kind of spawned for a short time, it kind of spawned a thing on Twitter, which is still going on. If people were to look up the hashtag Imagine the World Without Us and also the hashtag Rethink Gay, there's tons of tweets, both by myself and others, that kind of tie into this of reminding us of these people. You know, people love the book The Color Purple and the movie The Color Purple, and they don't realize that Alice Walker had lesbian affairs, or that Tracy Chapman, who sang Fast Car and was a sensation for a short time, you know, that she's a lesbian. And there's so many people that just don't come to the forefront of your thinking. But if you thought, okay, that whole summer that I was listening to that one song, you know, by mm-hmm. George Michael, what if he were not around anymore? That song of my summer would be gone. And it really kind of tries to get people to think more globally, like, yes, okay, maybe you don't like us, but if we were not here, how would your reality be changed? You know, you'd be sitting in a really bare, uninspired environment without a lot of interesting decor, listening to music that may not necessarily be as inspiring, or arts that are as inspiring. And, you know, you just go down the road, you know, go down the whole list of, you know, tennis without Martina Navratilova, you know, that kind of thing. So it's kind of ties into that, and it makes me wish, I wish that our curriculum was more inclusive, and at least with our kids, you know, my oldest Mason, he's really interested in African-American history, and one of the things they were asked to do one day was to, you know, make a list of five different leaders who had made advances in civil rights, and he gave me his list, and they were all, you know, straight black people, and I said, you know, sweetie, there's others who also, you know, made some, you know, some strides in terms of in civil rights. And in the black community, most people don't know, but Bayard Rustin, who was the right arm to Martin Luther King, you know, was gay. But most people don't know that. Or,
wow.
You know, what about writing about Harvey Milk in terms of civil rights being LGBT rights? So I kind of tried to get him to think more globally as opposed to just this one train of thought that he was following. And he ended up writing and including things about Harvey Milk in his paper. So, you know, it does come
wow.
out if prompted along.
Well, you know, and I think, again, it just goes, you know, if you're going to be talking to a bunch of straight parents, how many straight parents are going to say, well, you know, that top five list is great, but, you know, it's not very inclusive. You really should have more LGBT, you know, leaders in there. I just think that's going to be a struggle, at least for, you know, some time until, you know, more names with visibility, you know, come out.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway.
And that's really what it's all about. It's, you know, living your life fully and authentically and, you know, letting people know that you're here and that others are here and that, you know, we're not going anywhere. And that's really what's turning the tide for us.
So can we talk a little bit about politics and yucky people that we just aren't really sure what they're doing in life?
Which one are you referring to? There's plenty.
Well, I want to start, since I'm in Huntington Beach, and, you know, you're, you know, about a block and a half away, comparatively speaking. There is this nut, and I need people around the country and around the world who are listening to know, we do not support, like, or appreciate who this person is, and we want them removed and disbarred immediately. But there's currently a bill that is in the legislature, or trying to get into the legislature, that our California Attorney General, Kamala Harris, is asking to toss out. It's called the Sodomite Suppression Act. And there's a lawyer by the name, I just even hate to give him any kind of press, but his name is Matt McLaughlin. He's in Huntington Beach, so I have no idea where he is in Huntington Beach, but I don't want to be anywhere near him, because he feels that it is appropriate to execute gays with bullets to the head, as well as serve 10 years in prison and permanent expulsion from California. So I guess they're going to either take us to Tijuana or Yuma for anybody who advocates gay rights to minors. So what do you think about this whole kerfuffle that's going on right now?
Well, you know, it's interesting for those, you know, not in California. We have a really weird ballot process where anyone can get anything they want on the ballot as long as they pay a $200 fee, essentially. And it's then up to the Attorney General to come up with whatever the name of that ballot measure will be. And then the person has to do the harder point, which is, before it actually gets on the ballot, they have to get a certain number of signatures. So that's kind of the process that people are supposed to follow. And so this does point up a huge flaw in that process, which it was intended to give people the ability, whether they were, you know, part of a larger group or more disenfranchised, to give them the ability to get things that were important to them onto the ballot. So it's a well-meaning process, but this points out the flaw, you know, where somebody can do something pretty absurd and just pay a $200 fine. And what's kind of or a $200 fee. And what's interesting is that now there's a countermeasure being proposed by this woman, and she's can't remember exactly what her name was, but she's got this Intolerant Jackass Act, which she's trying to get on the ballot, which is, if you try to get a ballot measure like this guy did onto the ballot, then you've got to do, you know, some sensitivity training and contribute to an LGBT organization. So it's just, it's becoming a circus act, and not a very appealing one. But I also know that people have looked into trying to get him disbarred and whatnot, and so far, you know, we're waiting to see if the Supreme Court actually acts on her recommendation to toss this out, or if they're just going to let her go through and have to put it on, give it a title.
She's mandated to do this, and she's like, I can't even fathom doing this. So, you know, she's at a crossroads as well, because, you know, by law she's required to do her duty, and morally she's like, this is absolutely wrong on every level possible. So here's I think what really bugs me. This is not his first time, Mr. Matt McLaughlin, so-called attorney, where he's tried to create, you know, combative legislation. And I think that what I struggle with here, Kurgan, is throughout this entire process, one of the things that is not being said is, you are wasting my time, your time, taxpayer dollars, taxpayer resources, when we have education we need to fund. We have, water conservation issues we need to deal with. We have homeless issues we need to take care of. We have budget shortfalls we need to take care of. We have roads that need to be fixed. And you want to spend your time doing something that, unless you are really completely insane, you want to spend your time trying to get this bill out there for people to waste their time with, so you can shoot gays in the head. I really have a problem with that. And for anybody to, you know, be an attorney and to be comfortable with that in any state in this country, I really think that there have to be consequences. And the fact that, you know, he can't just be immediately disbarred, and I guess that's, you know, one of the great things about our country. You all have a due process. But you have this obvious nut who has some other agenda going on outside of the fact that he wants to practice law, or, you know, have laws passed in California that are beneficial to all Californians.
Well, and I don't know. I like feels about this too. It's like, okay, so you're saying you're going to shoot gay people, and how are you going to do this? What's the process? I mean, it's kind of like, has he really thought all this through? Like, what's the chain of, you know, events that are going to happen? What does somebody have to have done? How is it going to be proven? You know, it's just, it's the whole thing is kind of laughable. And as you said, it's rather sad that we have to spend time and energy even, you know, talking about this douchebag.
But it's, you know, I think the thing that shocks me, though, is, you know, we're in this progressive state or, you know, left-wing, you know, California, and we have this nutbag out here talking about this type of stuff. If you said this is taking place in a different state, in a different region of the country, I would say, well, it's that, you know, it's that part of the country. Here in California, we just don't have, at least I don't see it very often. We just don't have people that talk like nuts all the time. But this is getting a lot of talk around the country. And, you know, the other thing that came about today that really kind of unnerved me a little bit, and I'm glad to see Salesforce.com is one of the companies that are really taking a tough stand, but Indiana passed a law which kind of revoked a lot of rights. They call it a religious freedom bill. It's a very open-ended dialogue about, you know, denying certain people service just because you say, well, you know, I don't believe it. It's against my religion. I think the against my religion defense is really weak in a lot of cases now, and, you know, we're seeing more and more people by default say, oh, it's against my religion. How do you feel about that, Kirkin?
Well, you know, it's really ridiculous. And again, this goes back to this. It's the same thing as the, you know, people who run bakeries who say they're not going to bake a gay wedding cake, or, you know, a flower vendor who says they're not going to, you know, grant someone's wedding wish and bring flowers to the wedding. You know, you just have to go, something is off kilter here. Indiana is really facing a backlash right now, not only the Salesforce thing that you mentioned, but I know Gen Con, which is a big gamer convention,
right,
is talking about moving out. And, you know, these are just the first people to have made this known that they're going to be acting on this. And you just have to wonder what is going on in the governor's mind, because he could have, and there was a movement, you know, to get him to actually not sign the bill, and it didn't happen, and he actually did it. He signed it in a closed-door meeting with nuns and monks present, and you have to think, okay, what is going on here? I mean, who's running the state? And obviously this was a Republican-driven bill that was passed and then went on to him for signature, but the repercussions are going to be very costly, and really, hopefully, for the rest of the country, it will be a watershed moment where they will realize at some point that they made a mistake and backtrack, and because, you know, financially it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And you just have to wonder, you know, I'm not quite sure how the religious freedom bills even got this far. You know, in the days of segregation, I don't see a whole lot of difference between, okay,
there's none.
I can't serve you because, you know, you're black versus I can't serve you because you're gay. And, you know, it's a little unfortunate and short-sighted, and, you know, unfortunately history is repeating itself in an ugly way, and you'd like to believe in this day and age that we're all going to move forward as a community, but clearly that's not happening. If you just look back to what happened, you know, this brings up the whole issue of boycotts, but if you look back to what happened with Chick-fil-A when the
mm-hmm.
head of Chick-fil-A negative statements, and so the gay folks are saying, okay, we're not going to go to Chick-fil-A. And then you have this huge tide come the other way of, like, we support Chick-fil-A. And so it's this rolling back and forth. And just when you think maybe we're all on the same page or getting on the same page, something like this happens that just shows you how out of step a good chunk of the population is. And, you know, it's a reminder that we're not where we need to be, and we won't be for some time. And obviously the strides we've made are tremendous, but there are muddy waters ahead in many states that are considering, you know, similar bills like this.
Well, in the article that we're referencing, or at least I'm referencing right now, is called What Fundamentalists Are Missing About Religious Freedoms Bills. And this is on the blog, again, off of Huntington Beach, Huffington Post. And I'm just going to read just a real quick little blurb off of this because I think it just sums it up perfectly. It says, the irony is that they completely think they're doing the right thing what Jesus would do. It seems an easy realization that this religious freedom comes at the cost of oppressing another, but in defense, they would very much say that the same applies to them, and now we're in a catch-22 of prejudice. The author says the answer, and he says, I can't believe I'm about to say this, is Jesus, the man who loved all unconditionally. For those so concerned with the inevitable coming of gay marriage, is it not time to sincerely ask, what would Jesus do? So there is that. You're just talking about the backlash on, you know, Chick-fil-A, and I've eaten at Chick-fil-A once in my life, and honestly, I wish I understood what the whole thing was about it, but I never got it enough to really get on board. So boycotting, you know, Chick-fil-A or Target or any of these other companies that have maybe made statements along the way or given donations where, you know, we feel they probably would have been better doing it in a different way. I've tried to be as boycottish as I possibly can, but, you know, we've seen recently, like Dolce & Gabbana last week, talking about, you know, having kids through in vitro fertilization were called synthetic, and, you know, that just led to a bunch of boycotts. Do you have, I mean, and not to put you on the spot, do you guys have any D&G clothing or sunglasses or stuff like that, you know, in your collection of stuff?
Well, you know, Russ is much more fashionable than I am, and I'm sure he probably has something. I am so not trendy.
Me too.
When we got there, I let Russ go into my closet. I used to have a standard wardrobe of L.L. Bean plaid flannel shirt, jeans, and work. I loved
right.
it. I felt
yeah.
really comfortable. But
yeah.
He is very fashionable, and then one of the things I said to him when we got together, I said, you know, I'm going to give you this one-time freedom. You can go into my closet and take out anything that's really offensive to you and put it in a pile. And it used to be in those days, I don't know if L.L. Bean still has this, but they used to have this great return policy where you could just, no matter how many years later, them for the full price. So I sent this huge, gigantic box back to L.L. Bean, and I got a store credit, $100. So
that's totally
yeah,
cool.
I
love
any,
that.
But, you know, like you were talking about boycotts, and when Target made some missteps and donated in Minnesota to a right-winger who was anti-choice and anti-gay, I made the decision not to shop there anymore. And for me, it was a huge,
mm-hmm.
huge. Most people, you know, because we've got kids, I obviously try to be as economical as I can when
right.
I shop. And because Target has, many of their stores have the groceries in them, I would go and spend roughly $300 to $400 a week at a Target.
Holy
and,
cow.
You know, I would do all my shopping in one fell swoop and everything, you know, back in the day from diapers to underwear
yeah.
to whatever, I would do it all at Target. And so when this came along, it was a huge, and not only did I buy everything there, I loved shopping there. It was a great experience. I hate Walmart. I hate not only what they
mm-hmm.
stand for, but the whole aesthetics
mm-hmm.
of Walmart. It's a depressing
mm-hmm.
place. And Target, I go in and I get inspired to shop and I spend money. And so it was a huge change. And then all of a sudden
yeah.
I found myself having to go to four or five places to get what I was getting at one place. And it was a, you know, it took a while before I actually started shopping at Target again. Once they kind of made, well, they didn't really make amends, but they kind of backtracked and they started selling some gay pride items and stuff. And I thought, okay, well, I guess this is my sign that, you know, I could probably go back here again. But it's still not with the same dedication or enthusiasm that I used to shop.
Well, and the interesting thing about that, though, is that it was just like the head of Target, because if you take a look at Target's employee HR policies, you know, they're very LGBT inclusive. They've been very supportive in many pride festivals around the country. So, you know, if you ever wanted to work there, you'd be, at least as I understand it, in a very, you know, warm and welcoming environment. So having, you know, the head honcho of Target, you know, give $25,000 or $100,000 to these groups that don't support LGBT issues. And not that you have to give it to support an LGBT issue, but don't give it to somebody who hates us and is trying to actively do work against us. I just was really, really shocked about that. But you know, again, but like you said, you know, I probably didn't spend $300 or $400 a week. I probably spent maybe $100 a month. But, you know, my $100 a month now doesn't go to Target. You know, and if I go back to Target, it's very rarely, maybe once every couple of months at most. And I'm only buying a very specific item that I just need because, you know, Target happens to be close. But I'll either order online or I'll do anything else except go to Target now. And I'm sure a lot of people have, you know, made similar lifestyle changes in that, you know, okay, well, they don't support us, so we're not going to support them. And when everything got, you know, amended and everybody's happy and playing nice with each other again, you know, your buying decisions have changed. You know, you're not going to go spend that same dollar amount just because, you know, you have consciously made a decision to go do something else, even after the nice things have been said and everything's been smoothed over. But I don't know. I just thought that, you know, here's another example of, you know, a company whose owners just really, you know, you just should keep your mouth shut.
Well, and I
think for Dolce & Gabbana.
Well, yeah, and I think the thing that really was disappointing to many of us is, you know, we have enough haters as it is outside of our community who are trying to take us down on a daily basis. And when you have something like, you know, these two gay people who used to be a couple and reportedly one of them had actually asked a friend to do, have a kid through surrogacy. Here they are saying, you know, that it's wrong and that having kids is wrong and, you know, kids deserve, you know, a mom and a dad. And then you've got, you know, Rupert Everett sometime back saying the same thing and he's a gay man. And you just go, okay, I understand maybe you have a different worldview, but just because you have a platform to voice that view, it would be nice if you were a little smarter about how you thought it through, because it may not be a choice for you, but it's a choice for many of us, whether it's kids or getting married or anything on our map of things that we're trying to achieve. And we certainly don't need to have this kind of petty infighting and people pulling us back when we really should just be moving forward.
I completely agree. We've got about 3 minutes left, Kurgan. Any of the other articles that came about today that you'd want to hit? I mean, I just found one on the Bible Belt leading the nation in consumption of gay porn, but I suppose that could be left for a different day. What about
something I was leading the internet in gay porn search.
Okay, well, that could be too. Maybe you're leading California for everybody, but the percentages really are high in the Bible Belt. So there we go. How about let's end on a happy note. Let's talk about the fact that Nate Berkus and his husband have welcomed Poppy Brent Berkus to their family this week.
Well, I think they get points just for the daughter's name. What a great name, Poppy.
That is cool.
Who would have thought? But
could have been Apple.
I like Poppy better. It sounds very a little more friendly. Apple sounds
yeah.
a little crispy and crunchy and really. Poppy just sounds friendly and
okay,
sunny
cool.
And, you know, you can just see her becoming a future designer just by the, you know, the gene pool and
yeah.
the name alone.
Absolutely. Well, I think that it's awesome. So the American Dream Builders designer, he's 43, and his husband, does it have his, well, it's Jeremiah Brent, that's his husband. I'm trying to look to see how old he is, but they both look like they're very cute together, and now they've got a family of three. So congratulations on no sleep, lots of diapers, and, you know, looking haggard for the next couple of years until, you know, she starts to grow up a tiny little bit. I think that's really cool. So congratulations, guys. Kurgan, we're at the end of the show tonight. We've got about a minute left. Any last famous words of wisdom you want to share with listeners before I promote heavily the Worry Dolls we're coming on tomorrow?
No, you know, the only thing I'll say is, you know, back to Nate Berkus, is most people probably don't remember, but when that big tsunami hit several years ago, he lost his partner. And
mm-hmm.
I believe they were actually both out on the beach together, and his partner was swept away and was never recovered. So the fact that he, in this, you know, years since, has found love and now has a baby girl is just amazing for the rest of us. It's good. It's some good news to end the night on, and it just shows you can move forward in life. And as we were talking about earlier, you can obtain your dreams. You just need to put a plan of action to it.
There we go. There we go. Everybody, it's been Super Gay Radio tonight with Kurgan Edward Stout. My sincere appreciation for taking time out of your evening with the family and the kids. And Russ, So make sure to tell them hi, give them a big hug for me. Everybody, tomorrow on Rated G Radio's Friday Night Dance Party, it's actually a Friday noon dance party, we're going to have the Worry Dolls, UK's hottest folk band. That sounds crazy until you hear Emma. She is their lead singer, Emma Baldry, and she sounds like Janis Joplin meets Led Zeppelin. I've been listening to their music all day today. They are absolutely incredible. They're setting every place they go on fire. And not literally, but just, you know, their music is really, really good. They're doing a world premiere for the first time ever in the world, not even just here in the States, in the world. We're going to debut their EP that comes out on Monday, March 30th, tomorrow on the 27th, and that's called The Ride. The link for the pre-order will be up on the show page tomorrow. Also, Kurgan, if you didn't know this, we're broadcast live five nights a week at 5 p.m. UK time on West Star Radio in the UK. So everybody driving home tonight, want to thank you for tuning in and listening. If you like what you hear, go to Facebook and like Rated G Radio. Do it. And then we will see everybody back live at noon Friday 4 at the Friday Dance Party of the Worry Dolls. Kurgan, I'll talk to you next month.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.